File 8.
Audiobookforfree.com has a special section designed to be used by blind and visually impaired listeners. Enjoy the colourful world of our audiobooks.
Crucial element number 3 to make your quarry fall in love with you. Feed their ego in a very special way. Now let us come to yet another crucial element in making people fall in love with you. Feeding their ego. How good you make them feel about themselves when they're with you. There is one conviction every man and every woman in the Western world shares, and that is the certitude, I am different. I am unique. I am special. No matter how ordinary I may appear to the outside world, inside I know I am a singular sensation. Somehow we were all born feeling that way. As infants, we thought we had Mummy and Daddy's unconditional love. But then, for most of us, the realities and insecurities of life set in. Many people spend the rest of their lives desperately searching for that someone who will help them recapture the childhood dream of unconditional love. They convince themselves, someday, somewhere, someone will come along, and this individual will recognize my specialness over all other ordinary individuals, and they will love me for being me. Not for my physical beauty, not for my money, but for me, the essence of me. Make your quarry feel you are that person, and your reward is they will fall in love with you, because the pools where people behold the most ideal reflections of themselves are the eyes of the men and the women they fall in love with. Let us now proceed to the secret of making your quarry feel that he or she has, at long last, found the person with the potential to love them unconditionally. I have many techniques to feed your quarry's image, but I want to share with you here the most important one of all. I call it the Big Bombshell Booster. The hottest way to fan the flames of love and keep them burning forever is to feed your quarry's deepest self-image. It starts with the two of you playing a game, but only you know the rules. In a quiet moment, conducive to conversation, say, "You know, honey, I was listening to this tape the other day, and it talked about how, when all is said and done, when life comes to a close, what would you want to be remembered for? People were asking each other what they wanted inscribed upon their tombstones." Well, not everyone has the same self-image. Not everyone wants to feel brilliant or beautiful. There are those who would prefer to be perceived as Mr. Clean, a playboy, a Lolita, a sweet little princess, or a crazy, wonderful kind of crackpot genius. The variety of self-images is incalculable. And the secret is not to blatantly compliment, but to support your quarry's image. Quote, "Rest in peace. Here lies Sally Smith. She was an adventurous soul." Or, "Here lies Sally Smith. She was a giving and caring individual." Or perhaps, "Rest in peace, John Jones. He was a wise and insightful man." Or, "Here lies John Jones. He made the world a better place." Ask your quarry to play that game. Give them your self-image first, and then ask theirs. Now, here's the technique. Don't mention it for several weeks. But then, when the time comes for you to tell your quarry how much you admire them or why you love them, say, "Sally, I love you because you're so adventurous." Or, "Sally, I love you because you are such a caring and giving individual." Or, huntresses, say, "John, I love you because you're so wise and insightful." Or, "John, I love you because you make the world a better place." Wow, that really gets them in their deepest spot. Technique number 19, the Big Bombshell Booster. First play the "What would you like inscribed on your tombstone" game. Remember their answer. Then weeks later, tell your quarry that's why you love or admire them. It's a big bombshell that boosts their self-image. It is saying, "I love you for the essence of you, not for what you can do for me, but because you are you. And that's how we all want to be loved. We fall in love and stay in love with those in whose eyes we see our own ideal self-image. There you have it. The best ego meal to feed your quarry's ego, and then get them addicted to the delicious ego cuisine that you concoct. Crucial element number 4 to make your quarry fall in love with you. The equity principle. Showing him or her that you bring equal or better objective value to the relationship. During a heated argument, a man I once loved snarled at me, "Everybody's got a value in the open market, baby." I was appalled. How crass. How could he see people as commodities, especially somebody he said he loved? What a repulsive way to look at relationships. To me, love was beautiful. Love was pure. It was the source of the most intense human pleasure known to mankind and had no parallel in human experience. To me, love was sharing, trusting, total giving of self. The words of Robert Burns had reverberated in my heart since childhood. Love, O lyric love, half angel and half a bird, and all a wonder and a wild desire. And then to hear him liken his loved one's qualities to pork bellies or soybeans on the commodities market, that was too much. I stormed out of the room, and soon thereafter out of the relationship. Now, many years later, older, and some few could argue wiser, I wonder, was he right? Not in his manner of presentation, certainly, but in his facts. It surprises no one to hear that everyone wants to get the best possible deal in life. Nor are they shocked when they learn about the law of supply and demand in business. People don't even flinch when sales gurus preach that in all human interaction, the big question is WIFM, W-I-I-F-M, what's in it for me? So why do we recoil when researchers tell us the same natural laws apply to love? Recently, the scientific community, not content with theories of love proposed by Sigmund Freud, sublimated sexuality, or Theodore Reich, filling a void in oneself, set out to get the real skinny on love. Conducting numerous surveys and laboratory experiments, they peeled back a deeper layer of the human psyche. Did they uncover some ugly facts? Did they confront a monster? Some might say yes. Others would laugh it off and say, of course not. Whether you see their findings as the abominable snowman or the archangel of truth, it is quite simply this. Studies do indeed support the thesis that everything and everybody has a quantifiable value on the open market, and everybody wants to get the best deal in love as well as in life. Researchers christened their findings the equity or exchange theory of love. The equity theory of love is based on the same sound principles of barter and open market value. Lovers unconsciously calculate the other person's comparable worth, the cost-benefit ratio of the relationship, the hidden costs, the maintenance fee, the assumed appreciation. Then they ask themselves, is this the best offer I can get? Everybody has a big scorecard locked away in their heart. And in order to make somebody fall in love with you, you have to make them feel that they are getting a very good deal. In love, the studies show that the more qualities you bring to the bargaining table, the, quote, better you will do in love. The more your assets even out, the more apt you are to make someone fall in love with you. Equity theorists tell us, quote, the more equitable a romantic relationship is, the more likely it is to progress to marriage. Let's put it in monetary terms. What currency buys a good partner? Proponents of the equity principle list 6 elements which are assets on the open market when lovers go husband or wife shopping. Number 1, physical appearance. Number 2, possessions or money. Number 3, status or prestige. Number 4, information or knowledge. 5, social graces or personality. And 6, inner nature. Researchers tell us that in the happiest of relationships, the partners are more or less equal in each of the above categories, or if not, their qualities balance each other out across the board. But usually, partners who wind up together are relatively equal in the same category. As an example, let's take category number 1, physical appearance. Studies all the world over, the United States, Canada, Germany, Japan, show that men and women usually wind up marrying people just about as attractive as they are. A group of psychologists observed young couples at social events and rated their appearance on a scale similar to the now legendary Bo Derek's 1 to 10 rating. They found that 60% were separated by only 1 point on the scale and 85% by 2 points or less. I decided to put their findings to my own informal test. For several weeks, everywhere I went, to the movies, to the mall, to parties, to restaurants, I watched husbands and wives, boyfriends and girlfriends. I looked first at the man, then at his partner. Individually, on a scale of 1 to 10, I rated their appearance. And never were they more than 2 points apart. Try it! It's an awful game, but it proves the point. Researchers tell us if a couple is not equal in the same category, usually their, quote, assets, across the list even out. For example, how often walking down the street have you passed a stunning woman on the arm of a pinch-faced, much older man? What is your first thought? Admit it. You probably said to yourself, gosh, he must really be rich. Or you see a handsome man walking with his arm around a very plain woman. You muse, golly, she must have a great personality. That's the equity or horse trading principle at work. It can't be denied. Good looks, lots of money, and high social status are definitely legal tender in the acquisition of love. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. We all think we want a terrific partner higher in all the categories than us. Richer, kinder, better looking. Practically every young American girl of my generation tucked the covers daintily around herself every night, dreaming of the handsome prince who was someday going to come riding by on his white horse. He would, of course, fall madly in love with us, scoop us up, and we would live happily ever after. Oh, it didn't always have to be the handsome prince. It could be a rich prince, a wonderfully kind prince, or a strong and sensitive prince. Perhaps we dreamed he would be a poet, or an artist, or maybe a famous actor prince. As we grew older, our dream didn't change. We simply expanded the definition of prince. He could be an internationally esteemed doctor prince, a brilliant CEO prince, a Silicon Valley sage prince, or a state governor prince. But whatever role we cast him in, he was the prince. Huntresses, maybe even now you still believe, someday my prince will come. Well, guess what? He may come. But when you see the results of the studies on love, you will realize you don't want him to come. Women, if it's happiness you seek, you don't want to marry the handsome prince. Men, you don't want to marry the beautiful princess. Sour grapes? Not at all. Unless you were born in a royal crib, unless you are equally beautiful, equally rich, equally accomplished, life with prince or princess would be inequitable, and therefore you would be miserable. No, you protest. If I married someone better looking, richer, more accomplished, for simplicity, let's just say better, if I married someone better than me, I'd be thrilled. Yes, the studies tell us, but not for long. The equity theory proves you'd soon be unhappy. The more, quote, superior your partner is to you, the quicker you'd both feel wretched. The principle states that when there is an imbalance in a relationship, both partners sense the inequity and try to restore the balance. In other words, even the score. It is easy to understand why, in an inequitable relationship, the superior partner might feel dissatisfied. After the first blush of love wears off, he or she looks around and figures they deserve a much better deal. But what about the inferior partner? Shouldn't he or she feel darn lucky to have bagged such a great mate? Supposedly, yes. But in reality, they wind up worried, insecure, always afraid they don't measure up. Then insidious things start happening, and the inequality monster starts eating away the love. In inequitable marriages, the partners start taking advantage of the relationship to even the score. The superior partner might start to make subtle demands, like feeling entitled to conversation whenever he or she feels like it, or solitude whenever the mood strikes. A superior wife might get lazy with verbal expressions of love and affection, or withhold sex. If she is already giving more than her husband, she figures subconsciously, why work harder to make his sex life fulfilling? A superior husband might even feel justified embarking on an extramarital affair. After all, he tells himself, I deserve more. The poor inferior in the relationship is doomed to a life of insecurity about their love, or having to swallow it whenever the partner decides to take advantage of the relationship. The happiness at having bagged such a great mate soon turns into the day-to-day reality of always being number two. It's no fun being number two and spending your life trying harder. If you're a poor plain Jane and you marry the rich, handsome prince, he might wind up berating you, or you might go crazy on a self-improvement kick. If you didn't measure up, you'd be crushed. You could turn to drink or drugs or an eating disorder. Princess Di and Charles have certainly done their bit to destroy the joy of marrying the prince myth. Let's say you're an American princess with lots of money and good looks. You fall in love with a handsome, sensitive plumber who comes to fix the pipes on Daddy's yacht. Because you believe in true love, you marry him. Now, obviously, you call the shots in the relationship, like where to vacation and what kind of car to buy. At first, you both consider it fair because, after all, Daddy's money is paying for it. But sensitive plumber has pride. As time goes by, his ego can't take it. And even though he felt darn lucky when he married you, it ends up in bitter divorce. You really didn't do anything wrong. He didn't either. He's a nice guy. You played fair. It's just that the inequity overwhelmed the two of you. He winds up much happier with the waitress from the coffee shop. So far in this section, we've talked about market value through 1, physical appearance, 2, possessions or money, 3, status or prestige. These are but the first 3 assets that the equity principle scientists say influence love. They are important, but by no means the most important. In fact, many people prefer the next 3 qualities by far. They are 4, information or knowledge, 5, social graces or personality, 6, inner nature, inner beauty. These are tangible assets. Let's talk about that number 4, knowledge. The pursuit of knowledge is a lifetime commitment, one that brings you deep joy throughout your life. Intelligence gained through knowledge is also a potent asset in making someone fall in love with you. Many women, myself included, find the seedy, professorial, pipe-smoking, suede patches on the elbows of his sweater type of man very attractive. I once flipped over a man whom other women might call a poor, homely recluse because he was a genius on the computer. His knowledge deeply impressed me, and I wanted to learn from him. Hunters, especially in today's world, women have a tendency to fall in love with men who can help them professionally. Your knowledge is an aphrodisiac to bright, ambitious women. Social graces or personality is the 5th asset which gives you a higher value on the open love market. Techniques throughout this tape deal with these 2 aspects. Heed them all. The final asset on the list, and by no means the least, is your inner nature. Perhaps this is the most important of all. It certainly is the deepest. To make someone fall in love with you, strive always to have loving thoughts about them and about others. Give selflessly to other persons when there is no reward in sight. Be sexually faithful, financially responsible, and personally flexible. The list of inner nature qualities goes on and on. You probably never thought of them in these terms, but they are all marketable assets you bring to a relationship. Everything you learn, every experience you possess, every fine quality you develop is a tangible benefit in making someone fall in love with you.